songs that I heard sound very modern musical theater, and I do mean that in a derogatory way.
I know nothing about this show, and I feel like I will continue to know nothing about this show, and I also feel like I don't care about this show. Sorry.
They just went, we are greasers! We are greasers!
I think we need to move on.
Hi everyone, and welcome back to Off to Broadway, the podcast where we deep dive into anything and everything musical theater from the comfort of my car. I'm Tara.
I'm Stefania.
And in today's episode, it's time for the 2023-2024 New York season preview. I can't believe another year and we've made it here again.
Another year. Do you know we've been doing this podcast for 4.5 years? I feel like I reminisce all the time, but 4.5 years.
I know,
years.
It's crazy. It's actually crazy. And I feel like this is maybe a bit of like a broken record every time we do a season preview, but like, is this season uninspired again?
Maybe we just do these too early, but that's why it's a preview, okay?
Yes. Too early? We already have 8 new musicals on this list. Is that too early?
No, you're right. We have 8 new musicals and 4 revivals. And honestly, one of these musicals, by the time you listen to this, is literally closed. So the season is truly well underway. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it's interesting.
Yeah. We are going to New York in the fall. We will be seeing not many of these, but some of these.
For sure, we're seeing Merrily We Roll Along. That is the one we have tickets to already. Mm-hmm. And then kind of slots are open.
Because to be honest, it's 2 months away and we don't know if anything's going to close before then. It's an unexpected time. You never know what happens in the fall. It's like, I think we said this last year that like not a lot opens in the fall because things need to stay open for what? Next like April 30th, like the Tony cutoff.
Up until Tony time, really, if you want to get mm-hmm. votes for the awards. So, yes. Opening in the summer is a bit of a risk if you're looking for that awards attention. As seen by, let's talk about the one musical that is already closed, Once Upon a One More Time. They opened before or around the time when it was already in previews. It was already in previews when the most recent Tony Awards happened. Yes. So they were early, first one of the season. And my guess is that they were trying to capitalize on summer audiences, summer crowds mm-hmm. that were going to be in the city. Now, it doesn't really look like it worked. They knew that their audience was mostly going to be tourists visiting versus locals mm-hmm. For this show. So I understand the strategy, but it didn't quite work, it seems.
Also, we're devastated because this actually had made it onto our, like, November list of things that, like, should we see this? I don't know.
Gotta reshuffle.
No, but it is. I mean, also, sorry to any Cinderellas ever going on Broadway because you just have a bad rap, it seems. And also, like, maybe a Britney Spears jukebox musical is not the way to go. But, like, congrats to Justin Guarini because heard that you are the best part of this show and devastated that we won't get to see Circus live in person.
I'm really sad. This is
Jen Simard's Toxic. We'll never see that.
We'll never see Jen Simard's Toxic. Drop the bootleg.
Can you please describe for everyone the tweet that you sent to me of the light up bracelets?
Yes, it was Kate Ranking at Theater's Life on TikTok. But on Twitter, she said, really sad that Once Upon a One More Time is closing, but honestly shocked they posted a closing notice before getting rid of the free light-up bracelets at every show. They were super fun, but how much did that add to operating costs for 4 minutes of use? And when I heard it was 4 minutes of use, I actually was shocked. I thought it would be, like, the whole show.
Same. This, like, reminds me of the app downloaded for Rock of Ages.
How much were they paying for the app?
That didn't work when we were there, but did work when you were at home.
How many bracelets do you think are sitting in the back of that theater now?
Well, I mean, just thinking about our recent concert experience, the Jonas Brothers at the Rogers Center here in Toronto, we had to wait in line at the entrance because they ran out of those bracelets and they needed to, like, restock them. But Yeah, that was like 45,000 people wearing light-up bracelets that went for 3.5 hours straight, and to think that they're using those same light-up bracelets for only 4 minutes on Broadway is wild.
Crazy. Like, I think it's got to be expensive. I mean, buying each bracelet probably, like, a negligible cost, but the operating of it, my guess, is kind of expensive.
Devastated that we won't ever get one.
I know. What do you think they're on for on eBay?
Do you think they have branding on them? Like, are Jonas Brothers ones say Jonas Brothers, the tour? Do you think it says Once Upon a One More Time?
I do think so.
I mean, I say I need one, but, like, we didn't go to the show, so I actually don't need one. But
wow, I didn't even think whether they were branded. Let's see if I can.
It's funny, though, because I feel like we've been talking about this show off and on for, like, maybe years. 2 years. Because it was supposed to be part of, well, we had predicted it to be part of last season when we did this, like, season preview a year ago, because they had just done it out of town. I can't even remember. Maybe Washington, I think, was the out of town. It was supposed to be Chicago. We were in Chicago around the time when we saw, like, a poster for it, and then that run was canceled because of the pandemic. COVID. And I believe that they did a run in Washington last year, which led us to believe that it would transfer. And then it kind of, like, came out of nowhere after Bad Cinderella closed on Broadway. They were like, okay, gotta bring a new Cinderella back in. And they did, and now she's gone again. Although it's not just Cinderella. It's, like, fairy tale in general.
Multiple fairy tales? I don't know. Really not sure. We tragically did not get to see it. So we will never, ever know. I don't know. Be open for... licensing. Let's go. I'll do Once Upon a One More Time.
What we will say is that when the rehearsal footage dropped, we were both shook.
Justin Guarini slayed Circus. So the directors of this are, I just want to make sure I get their names correct. Directed and choreographed Kion and Mari, who are a couple and choreography duo. They've been on World of Dance. If you've ever seen the Justin Bieber Love Yourself music video, the two of them dancing in it. If you're familiar. So they choreographed and directed. This is their Broadway debut as well. And I love their choreography style, and I thought it made it so fun. But as we're watching videos of it earlier, you know, I keep talking about how much I dislike the costumes that we saw of it. I felt like the tone of the show, just based on what we saw, they hadn't quite married the music to the choreography to the costuming to, I don't know, other things. Like, it wasn't quite cohesive enough.
Yeah. I don't know. Go on tour. We'll see it.
I don't think it's going to go on tour. That is our eulogy.
It's not.
Once Upon a One More Time, I'm crossing it out my list, closed. Should
we just go in order of, like, release date? I feel like that's the easiest.
Absolutely.
Okay, so also opened in, well, the summer, because it's now September. Here Lies Love at the Broadway Theater. It opened July 20th. We've also kind of been following this show for a while, and I believe it was, like, over a year ago when we had read that the Broadway Theater would be completely transformed into this, like, disco dance floor situation.
Yes. So it's actually quite interesting because this show has been around for quite a long time. It was at the Public in New York in 2013.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's been rumored to be moving to Broadway really since then. It was starring Ruthie Ann Miles, Jose Lana, and Conor Ricomora still. He's always there. He's hanging
always.
Out. And it closed, and then it opened again at the Public in 2014, and then closed again in 2015. So then there's been this really long waiting period between that and coming to Broadway. There was a Seattle production in the middle there, but really it was that Public production and then this Broadway production. So, yeah, I feel like we waited a long time, and then the reviews for it kind of ended up very mixed.
Yeah, so if you see this show, you have the option to actually stand on the dance floor, and then there's also seating in the mezzanine that kind of mimic almost like, I don't even know, just like a second level of a dance floor. Like, if you were at a bar, but you're seated in this, in the mezzanine.
Yeah,
but
it's kind of like, they remove the seats from up there.
Yeah, it's kind of like if you were at a bar watching from above people dancing below. Now,
you know in like Miss Congeniality where they're at that bar?
Yeah, I'm also thinking like Night at the Roxbury, like kind of that situation.
I personally don't think I've ever been to a bar slash club.
No, not that's that double floored like top that. Level. But you see it in movies all the time. So.
Yes. They always are. Maybe Toronto just doesn't have this. Or maybe I'm one of the wrong places.
Every time there's like a dance floor scene at a bar, there's always multi-levels. People and from we're above. Really not getting that here. So we no, also don't go so out that low. Much. So
the
maybe
ceilings
we don't
are
know.
So low in Toronto. Like, gotta be honest.
Yeah. But from what I've read, if you are on the dance floor, there are ushers in quotations, but they're also kind of like security, maybe, that like move you from spot to spot because the stage also moves. This is David Korn, right?
I do believe David Korn did the stage direction. The set. It's still directed by Alex Timbers, who, you know, this is kind of his bread and butter, doing a really amazing stage. But yeah, I believe it's David Korn, so let me check.
It's funny, though, because I feel like when we first had learned about this kind of setup, in my mind, I was like, Circle. The most adaptable theater would be Circle in the Square. But to think that, like, the last show that we saw at the Broadway was West Side Story, which also was crazy because it rained on stage there, to be turned into a completely different space. Like, if you look this up on TikTok, I think Ashley Hufford actually was invited to, like, a preview of the set, and she did a full walkthrough of the theater. It does not even look like the same space. It's crazy.
It looks so different.
But yeah, so if you're on the dance floor, like, the stage moves, so you kind of have to move with it. And I know you want to be on the dance floor if we see this, but I don't know how I feel about that, because I feel like I will not be paying attention to anything except for, like, all of the moving pieces. Which I've read that people get distracted by everything that's happening, that they're not paying attention to the storyline at all.
Okay, I can definitely see that, but I just think...
The other thing, if anyone...
You have to experience it in the fullest, in my opinion.
Sure. I will also say, for anyone that's, like, going to this, apparently if you have epilepsy, absolutely not for you.
It's
if
a club. You, it's a dance club.
Yes, and it is extremely loud in there. So just, like, to keep in mind, there are... Sure. I don't think there are, like, safety, like, things issued, but do your research before you go to this, because if you... are triggered by lights or loud noises, this is absolutely not the show for you. You are walking to a club. I just think, like, imagine if we saw this as a matinee. Like, what do you do after?
What do you do after a matinee? This, you just, like, walk out into the sun and you're like,
I mean,
hello.
We might be... Oh, no, we actually won't be seeing this as a matinee because it doesn't line up with our three-show Saturday that we're trying to do. But if we did, imagine walking out of this and going straight into Titanic. That actually might be the way to do it.
What a night that would be. The thing is, like, okay, the ending of our three-show Saturday is Merrily We Roll Along, which I'm so excited for, but it's just,
like, a downer.
Not the vibe of Titanic, and it's not the vibe of Here Lies Love, and it's not the vibe of the other show we're considering seeing that afternoon, which we'll get to next. The thing about Here Lies Love is, my guess is that it's somewhat expensive to run on a week-to-week basis.
Oh, yeah.
And I don't really think it's making money.
It's been on TKTS since it's... like started, which is always not a great sign for money, like money wise. And those pre-sale tickets for the floor standing room are $3.99 a seat. And that's so expensive.
It's really expensive. It's really expensive. They seem to be having good weeks when Leah Salonga is in and having less good weeks when she's not.
Right.
So ideally you want a show that does not rely on star casting at the center. You want a show to stand by itself, and it doesn't, Leah Salonga is a producer. She's not the all the time star. So yeah, I just don't know right now. This past week it was at 80% capacity around. I'm looking at the Broadway World grosses because, you know, it tells us a lot.
The other thing
it
too,
went down this past week.
To add to this is that, like, this is music. It's David Byrne and Fatboy Slim, but the story is about, like, the Marcos family, which is a very, like, polarizing
somewhat controversial.
Family. So we've heard like mixed reviews on like people's personal thoughts of this family in general, mm-hmm. and then like the dramatization of it and whether that's right. appropriate or not.
So I have, I guess, like two thoughts. One, I've seen a lot of people saying if you leave this musical sympathizing with her, then you did not watch the musical, you were not paying attention. And the other thing is, we love Evita. You know, we've been watching Evita for 30 plus years. How is this different than that? And I haven't seen Evita on stage, but I'm more familiar with Evita than I am with Here Lies Love. But you have this like controversial woman at the center of it. I don't really see the difference in centering the story around one versus the other.
Right. I guess people are also looking at this because it's such a out there stage production of it.
Sure.
That maybe that is why like there's more sympathy towards this character, because you're like, oh, I'm in a different setting. But like I really don't know. I also don't know that much about the Marcos family in general.
No, I know. It's not something that's like that I have a lot of knowledge about.
My friend Chris said that there's an amazing documentary to watch on them, but I cannot remember what it's called. But I'm sure if you Google it, you'll be able to find it and like how wild that family story truly is.
I can understand maybe people seeing, oh, they want you to dance and party to this, to these songs about this family, this woman doing these terrible things. Like, there's kind of a cognitive dissonance between the subject matter and then the audience, like, partying.
Although, that title song, is...
Not good. Not
bad.
Here lies love. Not a fan. Not a fan. But
where are the light-up bracelets for Here Lies Love?
There should be light-up bracelets for Here Lies Love. That would
you
be
You know
really
what? They should dump all of the Once Upon a One More Time bracelets when they close. Just bring them to the... Just bring them to the Broadway.
I do love Conrad Rickamora, so...
Same. We'll Here see. We'll see.
Here for him.
Okay, next on the list, the show opened August 3rd, and it's Back to the Future. It's playing at the Winter Garden. This is a West End transfer, but without the West End cast, except for Roger Bart, who it was American in London and now coming back to New York, which I think we predicted when it opened and when they said that it was going to be... transferring to Broadway. I think we predicted that Roger Bart would move with it.
Yeah, I agree. Him being American in the first place and doing it in the West End, I think it makes sense that he kind of came back home with it to New York. This is another show that I'm kind of hesitant with. We've seen clips online of it.
It did win the Olivier for Best New Musical last year.
Oh. Against what?
But I don't know. But there are, this is again, like it's a very mixed bag of reviews. From what I've read, people liked it a lot more in the West End than they do on Broadway, but I wonder if that's just like a British audience laughing at American jokes that American audiences don't laugh at in the same way. You know what I mean? Sometimes the UK is like, oh, this is so funny. And then you see the same thing. You're like, this is not funny.
It's a different sense of humor. Okay, I'm going to read what it was nominated against at the Olivier's in 2022.
Okay.
The Drifter's Girl.
Never heard of it.
No, me neither. Frozen.
Heard of it.
Heard of it. Get Up, Stand Up, the Bob Marley musical.
Never heard of it.
And finally, this is the true shock. Moulin Rouge the musical.
Whoa.
Though I don't think the West End likes Moulin Rouge as much.
It's still playing.
It is still playing, but I don't think people like it as much as they like it anymore.
That's true. I actually did, like, randomly stumble on, like, a UK vlogger's review of Moulin Rouge in the West End, and they were like, I don't like the songs. And then in my mind, I'm like, did you go in not knowing that it was a jukebox musical? Because that's on you. Sorry.
I know. A lot of people just don't like jukebox musicals, and...
But it's just a blanket statement, and I feel like that's not a blanket statement to make. Like, you can't just be like, I hate jukebox.
No, I know. It's not logical. It doesn't make sense to me. The people who say that, we've discussed this recently. Like, it's
just
we did discuss this recently. It's a method of storytelling. It's not a genre.
Yeah.
Like, you can say it rarely works for you, but it doesn't make sense to be like, I don't like them as a blanket statement.
Yeah, like, I will not see a musical because it's a jukebox. Like, get over it.
Yeah, like, it depends on how they use the songs. I sometimes think it's a harder challenge to make those songs fit.
Yeah.
A storyline. But, yeah, like, if it works really well, like, sometimes, you know, The Highest Heights can be a jukebox musical. Mamma Mia Unmatched.
Some would say beautiful unmatched.
Well, I wouldn't.
Me either.
And Juliet unmatched.
Honestly, yes. And Juliet is unmatched. But with Back to the Future, this kind of falls under the same... I mean, again, we have not seen this. This is on our, like, potentials list because we've heard that the DeLorean trick in Act 2 is something that is not to be missed. But also... I feel like this falls under the same category of potentially Almost Famous, where your best songs are the ones that already existed.
We watched those Good Morning America performances, and they did the one original song. What song was it? I don't even know what it was. Anyway, not good.
It was not memorable, so...
Not memorable in any way. And then we watched A Curtain Call, and they were doing a song, and you're like, this song is great. And I'm like, yeah, because it's Huey Lewis in the News.
Yeah, it's back it's in from time. The movie. from the movie. And then I've also seen Casey Legs perform Power of Love, which, obviously, an amazing song.
From the movie.
Huey. Yes. Although, as I said before we started recording, I'm very happy for Casey Legs. Like, yes. Good for you. And also, please remember that I cast you in this musical.
Never forget. Never forget that you knew. How old is he? What year was he born? Do we know?
Well, he was in the Jimmies. Was it 2019 or 2018?
Guess what year he was born.
Like... 2000 and something.
It was 2000 and something. Okay, I will tell you. 2001. Yeah. Wow. Christmas Day, 2001.
Wow. Merry Christmas, baby. Merry Christmas to Casey Lake's family. Merry Christmas.
So, yeah.
2001. I don't know. Okay, so you're on the Broadway grosses. How is Back to the Future doing?
Good question. Let's
They've also been on the boards, like, every day.
Yeah. So they made, like... So this past week, the gross was... $1.169 million, which is pretty good, which is down from the week before.
I will say about this and what we've said previously about this is obviously this is a name player of a show. People know the name Back to the Future, so if you're going with, like, a family, like, probably going to go to this.
Yes, it's very family-friendly. Your average ticket price is about $100, $104, and our capacity is sitting around 94%, 95%.
Pretty good.
So, yeah, not bad. I don't think it's going to close... like, imminently. I think it will still be running when we get there in November.
I agree. I also feel like this will make it past Christmas because I think they will get, like, a holiday season boost.
Sure. Yes. The tough period is, like, January to March-ish. So we'll see about that. But I think it's going to make it to the Tonys. My prediction, Back to the Future is going to make it to the Tonys.
Wow. Okay, moving on. Our next show is opening October 12th. It's at the James Earl Jones Theater, and it is Gutenberg, the musical... starring Josh Gad and Andrew Rannells. I know nothing about this show, and I feel like I will continue to know nothing about this show, and I also feel like I don't care about this show. Sorry.
Yeah, I feel like the announcement for this really came out of nowhere. I think the stunt casting of this, they're both obviously established Broadway people, but the stunt is reuniting them from the Book of Mormon.
Yeah.
Which is, like, a fun marketing tool, and... both of them are wonderful. Love Andrew Rannells, but I don't know if this is going to be the avenue that I'm most excited to see Andrew Rannells in.
No. And we already said we're absolutely not seeing this.
If a ticket for this was free, I think I might turn it down. Like, that's where we're at right now with this.
Although, I've never been in the James Earl Jones, so maybe that could entice me.
What did the James Earl Jones used to be called again?
Was it the court?
Maybe. Yeah, I've never been there, I don't think, either. It's a small house, because it is a two-man show. It's only the two of them. Yeah. I saw a video bit that they did earlier where they were doing, like, a meet-and-greet with the whole cast of the show, but it was just the two of them, so they had all these bagels, but it was just the two of them. It was a little social media moment.
It was previously the court.
Yeah, I've never been in there. I think it usually holds plays.
Yeah. The last thing that was in there... Oh, currently... Or it's probably closed now, but the sign in Sidney Brustein's window. The Oscar Isaac, Rachel Brosnahan play.
Love Oscar Isaac.
I don't know. I'm actually looking at this list here. It's been a long time since a musical has been there.
Yeah, usually the smaller houses are more likely to host a play.
In the 2000s, like, there hasn't... It wasn't There was no musical in there. Yeah.
Okay, so the next musical that is opening this season on November 13th is, you know, my most anticipated show of the year. It's called Harmony. It is the Barry Manilow. That was a joke. That was a joke.
Wow, opening night the day after we leave.
Thank God. So it's a stage musical with music by Barry Manilow and book and lyrics by Bruce Sussman. The musical tells the true story of the comedian harmonists, an ensemble of six young men in 1920s Germany who took the world by storm with their blend of sophisticated close harmonies and uproarious stage antics until their inclusion of Jewish singers put them on a collision course with history.
If that doesn't say that you want to see this musical, I don't know what else will. We will absolutely not be seeing Harmony.
No, sorry. It really does... Oh my goodness, well, I'm on the Wikipedia page. The first production, February 1997.
Wow. It's been a long road. It's been a long road.
It's been a long road. Wow, Danny Burstein.
We're recording this episode on September 1st, and on August 31st, randomly, the Broadway cast recording came out for this show, so... If you want to listen to it, it's out there. We watched a clip on YouTube before we started recording, and I said, please turn this off. So that's how I feel about it.
Tony Yazbek was in that production at the Alliance. Okay, so at the Amundsen. So in 1997, February 1997, it was in San Diego, and it had Danny Burstein, Patrick Wilson, Rebecca Luker in the cast. Rebecca Luker. And then an out-of-town tryout in Philadelphia was slated for 2003. And then a Broadway one planned for 2004, but then it was delayed and delayed, and then all were canceled due to a lack of funds. So then we waited a really long time until 2013.
So that is a really long time.
Barry Manilow and Bruce Sussman had to win back the rights to the musical. So they won them back in 2005.
Sorry, and then they chose to run the musical. Who wanted these rights?
I don't know. My guess is that their, like, option expired.
Okay, sure.
That's my theory.
Yeah.
And then, so they won back the rights in 2005, and then they did the musical at the Alliance Theater in Atlanta, Georgia in 2013, and then at the Amundsen in Los Angeles in 2014. And then
there was a run last summer, no?
So we're getting there. Now we're into 2022 off-Broadway. So that was 2013, 2014. Now 2022. Wow, so they keep having these
literally
guests.
Almost so 10 years later. Yeah.
So persistent. They have the motivation. They are working it. It was Harmony's plan to debut off-Broadway at the Museum of Jewish Heritage in 2020. It was delayed, and then it ended up being delayed until 2022. Previews began on March 23rd, 2022, and it played until May at the Museum of Jewish Heritage in New York City. Warren Carlyle directed and choreographed this production. Scenic design, Beowulf Britt. Interesting. Anyone interesting in it?
It's not. Chip Zion, Sierra Boggess, Julie Benko.
Chip Zion was in that cast. Sierra Boggess was in that cast.
Julie was doing Funny Girl at the time, so I feel like she wasn't avail.
Yeah, and now 2023 Broadway, scheduled to open in the fall of 2023. Opening
Barrymore?
Date, November 13th.
Feels like a Barrymore to me. I have it written down. It is the Barrymore, confirmed.
It is the Barrymore. The Wikipedia does not say. Chip Zion, Julie Benko.
You know what? We love Jewish representation on Broadway, but I will not be seeing this show.
No, this does not interest me in any way.
But I do feel like it interests the same crowd that A Beautiful Noise interests, which is the, like, 70-plus audience. They should change their schedule.
They should do four matinees a week. Like,
love that for Beautiful Noise.
Beautiful Noise has never made a smarter decision. What's Beautiful Noise's weekly grosses looking
like? I'm sure they're killing it. They are on the boards every day, but I'm sure they're killing it.
That's fine. A Beautiful Noise, $730 weekly gross. Their average ticket price is $130, which is pretty good. Ooh, capacity like 60%. Mm-hmm. So never mind. Ooh, I don't know about that. But I do think that then...
The new matinee schedule has not started yet. So maybe
really
once that starts, it will
we'll
pick up.
See.
Yeah.
Have to see. Harmony. Interesting. But I think it's fun. So, of the shows we've talked about so far, Here Lies Love, Gutenberg, Harmony are all completely original scores. I don't know what Back to the Future is.
Well, they have those two songs.
Yeah, but I think it probably would classify as an original score just because the percentage is not high enough of the pre-existing music. So, and I think the other three we're going to talk about too, of original musicals, all original music. So
I know, it's really good.
This is good stuff.
I mean, good stuff, but also uninspired. So
no, I know. I go back and forth, but
I mean, to flip that. Speaking of something inspiring, the next show that is opening, which is on December 10th at the Belasco, and it's How to Dance in Ohio, which is based on the HBO documentary that's titled the same, How to Dance in Ohio, and it is starring like autistic actors, which is incredible. I feel like this is like the first time this has happened, which is crazy that it's taken this long, but we love the representation for this show.
Right. Well, it's about autistic teenagers.
I know, but I just think of like Curious Incident, which was an autistic character, and it was played by anybody,
you know,
except for
there was a few performances
where they like did have an autistic actor step in for that role. I remember reading about that at the time, but this doesn't always happen when you have a character that's based on like a real person. They just like put whoever in it, so now they're actually putting like the correctly represented people into these characters. It's very exciting.
I think the concern sometimes is for something like Curious Incident, which is a show I love, that's a lot to put on one person, even like anybody, a professional.
And also, like,
your whole life,
dependent on the person and triggers, like, the lighting is wild, the music is very loud, like, there's a lot happening that's, like, overstimulating, so, like, I 100% understand it, where it seems like, from the trailer that we've seen of this show, it's a lot more, like, simple.
More relaxed. It's also a bit more of an ensemble piece, like, it's not all on one person.
Yeah.
Anytime any one person is leading a show, that is a lot to do.
Oh my
God,
it's
hard work.
Yeah.
Yeah, this seems like much more of an ensemble, and I think especially because this show seems to be about the experiences of teenagers, of autistic teenagers and their families kind of navigating life and kind of discovering how they're going to, live in the world. I think it makes sense to have people who have authentically experienced that or can relate to that or can represent that authentically. In this show, instead of maybe turning it into sometimes a caricature, I think playing certain disabilities sometimes in media gets a little like, ooh. Mm-hmm. So hoping that this gets to stay away from that. We've seen a few clips of it.
The
this
premise
music
is that it's at a like counseling center, I believe. Like, from what I'm reading here, it says that they've adapted the work from Alexandra Shiva's 2015 HBO documentary, which follows the challenges faced by a group of autistic young adults at a counseling center in Ohio. With the support of a clinical doctor, the center arranges a spring formal dance and encourages them as they encounter love, fear, stress, excitement, and hope along the path to human connection. Yes, go on about the music. We did watch a few clips.
No, we did. I was going to say, I was watching an interview earlier about the documentary, and the director and the crew of the documentary went and explained to the people at the counseling center and explained exactly what they were going to be filming, let them, you know, touch the cameras, see exactly what they were gonna be doing so that they could all, like, consent fully to being filmed. And I don't know, I think it's, like, a really fun concept.
Also, reading this Playbill article, it says at the bottom here, to ensure authentic autistic representation on stage, the production will also be working with an accessibility team, including autistic creative consultants, and then it lists, like, a group of people, as well as director of community engagement, associate producer, and script consultant. So it does feel like they're taking all of the right steps to ensure that this is, like, done properly and safely for everybody, which is, it's really great. That's, like, it's very inspiring to see this.
And, like, authentically represents a community.
Yeah.
So absolutely love that. So what we're saying about the music is we watched videos of the music earlier, and for me, all of the songs that I heard sound very modern musical theater, and I do mean that in a derogatory way.
I was also gonna say, and maybe this is offensive and maybe it's not, but they also sound Canadian.
Yes. It's...
You know when you watch a movie and you're like, wow, this is a Canadian production? Canada. That's how I felt about the songs in this show.
No. There are, like, multiple things. One, it kind of sounds not like Dear Evan Hansen, but kind of from the Pasek and Paul School of Writing Musical Theater.
Which I had said to you, everything sounds like the Pasek and Paul style of musical theater since whatever year, 2017, when Dear Evan Hansen came out.
Earlier even.
2016, like, 2015, whatever that was. Yeah.
Yes, 100%. I feel like they are the kind of most notable writers of the, like, modern, quote-unquote, modern musical theater sound.
The modern musical theater, like, teen
contemporary
sound.
Almost YA,
yes
if you will, sound. There were certain, like, guitar strums that I was like, Dear Evan Hansen. It's a style of orchestration, like the piano chords, and also Canadian. I was reminded a bit of, like, Colleen and Akiva, a bit of
Who
Grow,
we
which we saw
love.
No.
But yeah.
But I think just when you've heard this style over and over and over again, especially without the context of the full show, like, maybe seeing it in a full show, I would feel differently about it.
You were also saying that, like,
piecemeal of it.
Yeah, like, and that only hearing, like, piano without, like, a full-blown orchestration, it's just, like, yeah, very modern, very, very teeny bop.
Yeah, what was the song that we were listening to? I like the songs. They're nice.
Whoever was singing had a beautiful voice.
Yes. Sorry, I'm looking up what this song is called. There was one that I was into earlier called Getting Ready for the Dance that's sung by the Mothers that I thought was super, super touching. Building Momentum is the song that I liked that we were listening to earlier. Really great. Who sang that? Building Momentum.
But yes, I understand what you mean. It just falls into the category of, like, YA musical theater, which we don't really have, but do have now.
Or what did I just see? Between the Lines? Kind of that energy. I like Between, like...
Who wrote that music?
I'm forgetting her name, but what's Kirsten Anderson Lopez's sister?
Oh, yes.
The team that wrote, like, Olaf's Frozen Adventure.
Yes.
They've written a few things, but...
It's Kate Anderson and Elsa Samsel.
Yeah. Love, but...
Oh my god, yeah, I didn't even think of Between the Lines. Which is so funny.
It's of a piece, yeah.
Sorry, this doesn't really have anything to do with anything, although we are talking about the, like, YA musical theater style, because I feel like pre-Dear Evan Hansen... Yeah, Percy Jackson, exactly, same kind of thing.
Like a Joe Iconis, like...
I was just about to say. But prior to that, we got, like, Heathers... Which would technically fit in the same level of YA, but it does not sound anything like this.
No, it doesn't sound like that at all.
So it wasn't until... Think,
yes.
I don't know.
It's a very specific style. I don't think Heather sounds like that at
no.
all. Even, let's say, like... What was I just thinking of?
I mean, Legally Blonde, but same, right? Oh, no. Mean Girls.
No.
Mean Girls is not. It
no,
doesn't sound like,
Girls,
but it's not.
No. Not necessarily that it's, like, amazing, but it doesn't... It doesn't fit into this category, even though it's about teens. Like, it's not just about being about teens. There's, like, a sound.
Yeah.
That like, it's not weird, but it's, I don't know. I don't know if I love it all the time. I think when we first started hearing it, it was fun to hear, like, kind of pop sensibilities, but now it's feeling just a little bit done.
Well, it's also, like, to me...
The Prom.
Pasek and Paul and Joe Iconis do it very well. So a lot of it sounds like imitation and it's not as good. So, yeah, it's very interesting.
It's giving a lot of, like...
The new style.
Song cycle.
Mm-hmm.
concept album.
Yeah.
You know?
So yeah,
anyway, yeah. I want to see this show. Like, I am excited to see this show because I think it's doing... I love that it's original. I love that it's telling a story that we haven't really seen that much, that we go to a lot of dances on Broadway at this time. I love...
No, I know. But also we were saying, like, looking at this list of eight, like, to me, this is something that's, like, feels very brand new and fresh, which is exciting.
Yes, not based on a movie. It is based on a true story.
Mm-hmm.
I'm looking at all of these in this list. In this list of new musicals for this year, all of them were either based on a movie.
Yep.
Or based on an existing property, like existing person or story, or existing music. There's not one that's original story, original music.
What's Gutenberg? We don't even know.
Oh, maybe that one. Maybe I just paid so little attention to that.
You know what? It really doesn't matter.
Gutenberg.
What's okay, the next so moving show? On to the next two shows. The next one we really have like zero information about because this was literally just confirmed like 3 weeks ago. And that's The Outsiders, which will be opening March 11th. We're now in 2024. And it will be at the Jacobs. I will not be returning to the Jacobs again. I feel like it's really going to take a lot for me to get back to the Jacobs because I've been there too many times in the last.
I could be talked into seeing The Outsiders. Like, we'd have to hear music from it, but I am very open to seeing The Outsiders.
Okay, so when I was reading the plot summary to The Outsiders, I mean, everybody read this book in, like, grade 6 or 7, right? Like, seven, I feel like seven. It was just, like, something that everybody did. I don't remember anything about this other than I was reading
Stay
that
gold?
It's too...
Stay gold, Pony Boy.
Two rival gangs, and I'm like, this is West Side Story, but that's fine.
The three brothers, Pony Boy's our main character. He's got a friend, Johnny. Then Johnny, like, kills somebody, so they go into hiding. Pony Boy dyes his hair. Then they, like, light the church that they're staying in on fire. He has to get rescued. Then they go to the hospital.
So it's like an episode of Outer Banks.
Okay, I've never seen Outer Banks. But, yeah, it's like a gang story, but it's like a coming-of-age novel. Like, in the book, Pony Boy is 14. He's got older... Did you ever watch the movie? Did you remember the movie?
I never watched the movie.
Okay, so this is actually... Not to get racy, but the big thing about the movie was there's a moment in the movie that was gossiped about before we saw the movie where Rob Lowe walks out of the shower with just a towel, and then he drops the towel.
Whoa.
But someone walks in front of him right before you can see anything. In seventh grade, all 12-year-olds, the rumor mill was buzzing about this, okay? You know? You would talk to somebody who had seen it in a grade before, and they'd be like, there's a scene where the actor who plays Soda Pop walks out of the shower.
Wow.
Similarly to, like, the Zeffirelli Romeo and Juliet, like, 2 years later in grade 9, everyone was like, the boobs.
Yeah, yeah,
so,
you're right.
You know, this stuff goes around the schools.
Yeah.
I can't believe you never watched this movie. Patrick Swayze.
I mean, I don't know why we never watched it, but I will say that the most interesting thing about the Outsiders musical on Broadway is that it is produced by Angelina Jolie. What?
Angelina Jolie. And her
that came out of
like
left
her
field.
Assistant. That is, it's so funny. Not funny, but it's fun.
And then we read today that music supervising is Justin Levine, who we love what he did on Moulin Rouge. So, like, that's great to have him.
Who's writing the music for this? You
know? So writing the music is duo Jameson Revival, which is Jonathan Clay and Zach Chance. This is their first foray into musical theater, which is kind of interesting.
What genre of music do they typically perform? Americana. Bluegrass.
I'm gonna say bluegrass. They've performed at Coachella, Austin City Limits, Stagecoach. Stagecoach is like country, so I want to say like, oh, it says like 60s and 70s folk pop is their inspiration. Okay. I can see that for this show. This kind of not that it's the same thing at all, but if you've watched the trailer and heard the instrumental music for the Brokeback Mountain that's playing in the West End right now, that is the vibe that I'm getting for this show. Oh, it's closed now.
Yeah. Mike Feist.
Lucas Hedges.
And Lucas Hedges. Two of our faves.
It's the vibe I see for this show is that kind of music, which is like bluegrassy country. I don't know.
So there is a song available on their website.
Oh, wow.
It's called Tulsa 67. Well, clearly we didn't prepare for this.
There's a lot of shows going on.
Okay, interesting. Yeah.
Oh, are you listening to it right now in your headphones? Yes. It's like, what's happening here?
I don't know if we're going to like this. This is interesting. It's a ballad.
Describe the song. Describe what you're listening to because no one else can hear it right now.
It's someone's like crooning.
Oh.
You'll hate this, sorry. It is country. It's country right now.
You know what? We haven't had anything like this on Broadway in a long time.
Imagine
okay,
like a banjo.
Like slow jamming.
I'm not hearing
to this.
Banjo, but I'm imagining banjo.
Okay.
Actually, I'm hearing banjo. A lot of piano. The lyrics are getting a little bit cheesy.
Oh. I really enjoy this silent interpretation of you just slow jamming to Tulsa.
I think the lyrics are a bit
called.
Literal.
I mean, everything today.
Everything's a little too literal right now. I think we need to learn about metaphors, guys. We need to
Is understand. It giving, like, Yellowstone vibes? They just said, we are greasers!
They just went, we are greasers! We are greasers!
I think we need to move on.
We are greasers! Why is that so funny? Oh, God. Okay,
should we move to our final new musical of the season, also based on a book and a movie and something that we have literally been talking about for years. Finally, The Notebook is coming to Broadway. It's our most anticipated. So this is announced for March 14th. It's playing at the Schoenfeld after what seemed to be like a revelatory run in Chicago? Is that where it is?
Yeah, Chicago Shakes.
At Chicago Shakes. We wanted to get out for it. We couldn't get out for it. We watched the trailer again today. We listened to Words again today.
Yes.
If you ask me who is winning Best Original Score, it is Ingrid Michaelson. If you ask me who's winning Best Musical based on one song, it is The Notebook. So, I know... We were... Ingrid had teased on her Instagram page that an announcement was coming, and we were really hoping that it was going to open in the fall, but devastatingly, it's not. I feel like I have to go, so we'll see what happens.
I know. I don't know if we'll be able to get out there then, again next year, but yeah, it is kind of probably my most anticipated. Of the eight that we've discussed, after Once Upon a One More Time is closed, The Notebook is my most anticipated of the new musicals, new original musicals this season on Broadway.
And as a fan
of Ingrid Michaelson's music.
And as I said in our last episode, the rumor mill is high that Joy Woods will be reprising her, I think it's Middle Alley?
Or she's left. Yeah, she was Middle Alley.
Left
at this point a Little Shop.
Because... not at the time of episode release, but in a couple weeks, Constance Wu and Corbin Bleu will be leading up Little Shop off-Broadway. You know, I really love that this show just keeps people employed. And
it's such a good production. I have a friend who just saw it, who also loved it.
So good. So I agree. This is my most anticipated. We've been dying to see this show for what feels like 3 years at this point.
Yes, ever since they did that first workshop. I don't even know, was it at Vassar?
I'm making a pitch to Ingrid Michaelson and co. right now. Please bring Antonio Cipriano back to Broadway. We'd love to see him as Young Noah or whoever he was playing.
That workshop had, I think, yeah, him as Young Noah and, like, Haley Kilgore.
Like, what, oh my God.
What a cast for that.
I know.
In the clips that we've seen, I love the kind of colorblind casting. Like, they're not, or in the production that they've done previously, they're not, you know, making sure that they all look like each other, which I kind of love that they're it's kind of like a storyteller in this story.
We've also heard that this production is absolutely devastating. And sure. Wreck me, I'm ready.
You know, that movie, it's an interesting one. I haven't seen the movie in a long time.
Love The Notebook.
But it is, you know,
it's two iconic.
Wonderful actors. Two wonderful actors, Rachel McAdams and Ryan
Gosling. Wonderful Canadian actors.
So true. Nobody better than them. They're the best. And it captured a moment.
Mm-hmm.
It captured everyone's hearts, that movie.
Yeah.
So I hope that the musical is able to do the same next year. And I hope it has the, like, intimacy that the movie has.
This also, to me, is, it seems like it will be opening, like, a month before that Broadway the cutoff for the Tony Awards. Mm-hmm. So... as we said, there are eight musicals right now. Obviously, it's only September, so anything could happen before that, like, April 30th time-ish cutoff.
Should we discuss the, like,
yeah, so potentials? At this current moment, it's, again, September 1st, but the Imperial, the Long Anchor, the Lyceum, Studio 54, Vivian Beaumont, and Majestic are all open. And
Majestic is open.
And as of last week, the Palace has a marquee. I do not think that theater is ready at all yet, but we're slowly making our way up to it. Do we want to do the potentials before we get to Revival, or do we do Revivals first?
I think let's talk about the potential.
There are a million potentials on this list right now, but I feel like we can just name some of them off and then talk a little teeny tiny bit about the ones that have more, like, levity than others. So starting us off at the top here, there are two Great Gatsby musicals that will be playing in the next few months. There's one that will be at ART, which is a score by Florence Welch, and then there is one that it will be at Paper Mill, which we are most likely going to see. I feel like I can't even make an assumption on this. To me, I know we're most likely going to see the Paper Mill one, but in my opinion, I would rather see the ART one because I feel like a Florence score is more exciting to me.
Okay, it kind of reminds me of the Wild Party, the double Wild Party that year, where there was an off-Broadway Wild Party and an on-Broadway Wild Party, just because the story had just gone into public domain. Is that what's happened here with Gatsby? Has it just entered public domain, and
there's
that's why
also
the timing of everything hitting both of these shows at once?
Well, also, this has nothing to do with these two productions, but there have also been multiple Gatsbys playing in the West End, so it is, like, a resurgence. The thing about the ART one that excites me, I know literally nobody except for me and my brother Tyler liked the Baz Luhrmann Great Gatsby, but obviously Florence's song Greenlight was in that, and I'm like, if that's the vibe that we're gonna get, then this is gonna be good.
I'm a really big Florence and the Machine fan, so absolutely. Great Gatsby entered the public domain in 2021.
So there you go.
Yes.
And don't get me wrong, I think that this is a fantastic story to put to stage. Also, think of the costumes, the set design. Like, it's going to be gorgeous no matter what production you see. So I don't know. It will be very interesting to see, like, photos from the dueling productions. And we will be able to form an opinion once we see one of these productions. So it's exciting.
Yes, I'm really excited to, one, we've never been to Paper Mill Playhouse in New Jersey before, so that'll be really fun. I think it's really interesting that these kind of two are opening, are going to be within, like, the same year. Mm-hmm. We'll see them for the first time. So it's
also shout out to Paper Mill for being fantastic on Instagram DMs.
Oh my God. In the comments?
Love.
Any day, any time of day, they'll respond to you.
And the next show that seems to have legs and has had legs for a little bit is Swept Away, which is the Avett Brothers musical. And Stark Sands just left Anne Juliet, and we were like, why is this man leaving Anne Juliet? This feels like a role that he could stay in forever.
It's been like a year, though, almost.
I know, but still. And then I'm looking through, I did this thing this year when I was looking at what could be potentially coming, and I looked at the biggest, like, Broadway transfer out-of-town tryout theaters, and realize that Arena Stage is one of those theaters, and Swept Away is playing there in the fall, and guess who's in it? Stark Sands.
So, is John Gallagher Jr. going to be in this production as well?
He is. So it seems like that cast that we were talking about this when? 2021, maybe?
Yeah, a few years ago.
Seems like that same cast is sticking together for this, and this is now the second out-of-town tryout. So to me, this feels like it's basically ready.
Well.
Yeah.
Beautiful music.
Next on the list, which we will be seeing this month or next month, is In Dreams. It just had a run in the West End. It will be in Toronto at the, I don't know what theater, Princess of Wales,
Princess
I believe.
Of Wales?
Wait, is it the, I feel like it might have been moved to the Ed Mirvish because Cursed Child closed. Let me confirm.
I think it's still the Princess of Wales.
It is playing at the CAA Ed Mirvish.
That's too big a house.
And for everybody that we said at the beginning of the episode that hates jukebox musicals, well, here you go. This is a Roy Orbison jukebox musical.
We were just calling for a Roy Orbison jukebox musical.
But it is a book by David Westreed, who just did Anne Juliet. So
Starring Lena Hall
and the man that played Shakespeare in the West End version of Anne Juliet.
What's his name?
David something? I don't know. But I'm really excited for Lena Hall.
Yeah, of course. Stunning voice. Yeah, I'll see. The visuals for it seem really fun. You know, 60s floral hippie.
Mirvish has also released some clips online, and it sounds good. Like, it sounds good. So, you don't think it sounds good?
It sounds fine, but sometimes the acting style does not translate to these clips. And
maybe I'm just Lena Hall can do no wrong to me, so maybe I'm like, she sounds good, and that's really all that I care about.
Hopefully everyone sounds good, but sometimes, like, when they film these, I'm like, actually, maybe we don't need to do that. Maybe
yeah.
we need to film this.
It's fair. So yeah, that's coming up, and I feel like Toronto is probably the pre-Broadway stop, but who actually knows? And then the next one, which is absolutely crazy, is Water for Elephants, that was just playing at Alliance Theatre in Atlanta, but according to the Instagram ads, they are already coming to Broadway, question mark?
Like, their Instagram account is like Water for Elephants Broadway or something like that. That's how we knew Moulin Rouge was coming, because it was called, like, their Instagram was Moulin Rouge Broadway. And it was like...
No, but I swear people were getting targeted ads for this.
I was getting a targeted ad. I sent one to you.
I know.
I sent you a targeted ad about Water for Elephants Broadway. But I also saw people on Twitter talking about it.
I mean... Another
website
movie adaptation. This starred, like, Izzy McCalla. And also, what's his name? Who also was in The Notebook? Ryan...
I was not saying it here.
Cardoza? Something. Yeah, Ryan Cardoza. Remember we were trying to figure out if there... Well, we did figure out there are two Ryan Cardozas, but the same one was in Water for Elephants and The Notebook.
Yes. Their website is not great right now. And it's not saying Broadway, but...
I will say Alliance Theatre did release, like, an hour behind-the-scenes look of this musical, which I did not watch, but it does exist online. I mean, to me, I do think that this works on stage. I absolutely think that a circus musical works on stage. I've been asking for The Greatest Showman for years, and if I'm not going to get that, I guess I'll get this.
This is fine. Yes, this movie was a little bit tepid, is the word I would use to describe it.
I just want to know who's playing the Christoph Waltz character. That's really all I want.
Christoph Waltz himself. I don't know.
That would get people in the theater.
Who's, like, yeah, I just... I need more information before I get excited.
Put it in the Majestic.
Put it in the Majestic. Good choice. Good choice.
Moving on this list, another one that I heard is all but... like, it's confirmed it's just missing a theater, is Lempicka, which played at La Jolla a couple years ago, starring Eden Espinosa. I really don't know anything more than that, but it was on our list last year of potentials, and then Sweaty Oracle on TikTok said it's confirmed but doesn't have a theater, so... Who knows?
It's based on a Polish painter.
Okay.
The life of a Polish painter, Tamara de Lempicka, as she flees the Russian Revolution to Paris, France.
Wow.
So, facing the rise of fascism.
Great.
Tamara takes to painting to survive. When she meets the free-spirited Raffaella, a prostitute on the fringes of Parisian society, she's torn between the life she cherishes with her husband and the passion, ambition, and possibility awoken by her new muse.
This sounds kind of heavy, but I also do love Eden Espinosa's voice, so...
Yeah, she's the best. Yeah, this cast, Eden Espinosa, Amber Iman, oh wow, previously played by Carmen Cusack. Oh, the Williamstown reading of Lempicka was Cynthia Erivo as Lempicka.
Wow.
Shoshana Bean has done it before, Julia Murney. Wow.
Okay, so like heavy hitters, belters.
Alphabas only. Shoshana Bean, Julia Murney, Lisa
Cynthia
Brinson,
Erivo.
Cynthia Erivo.
Eden Espinosa.
Eden Espinosa, Alphabas only.
Love it.
I need to confirm Lisa Brescia, who also did it, if she did. Wait, she did. Stand by for Alphaba.
Wow. And then to just, like, quickly go through this list, also on here, Sinatra, which Matt Doyle is leading in the West End, like, currently with Anna, what's her last name, Belafonte?
Oh, Anna Belafonte.
She's playing, like, Sinatra's wife. I don't care about this musical, sorry to everyone that's behind it. Summerstock was playing this summer at Goodspeed. Donna Fior directed. It starred Daniel Wade, Corbin Bleu, Will Roland. And then there's a new musical playing at Goodspeed in like a few weeks, The 12, which is starring Wesley Taylor and Itai Benson. Then we've also got Love All, which is the Billie Jean King musical that played at La Jolla, starring Shalina Kennedy. And then to round out our new musicals, still on our list, many, many years in the making, The Devil Wears Prada and Sing Street.
The Devil Wears Prada.
I'm just never going to remove these two titles from this list.
No, they stay on the spreadsheet forever. We're going to be 50 years old. We're going to be like, and still possibly coming to Broadway. The Devil Wears Prada.
So now we will go into the revivals. Let's just get the ones out of the way that we just said. So Tommy, what happened this summer at Goodman in Chicago? Chess at the Muni. This production was apparently incredible. And then also Evita was at ART starring Shireen Pimentel. And the photos from that production looked absolutely gorgeous. Stunning.
And I've highlighted one. Can you see what I've highlighted on your side?
Where?
At the bottom.
You at the very bottom? Survival. Where? Say it.
Okay. Aida.
We've been Aida!
Talking about Aida. Aida. We've been talking about potentially Disney on Broadway's next show being Aida.
Yes.
For 100 years.
So, okay, but did you see what I put in the special notes here? It was at Stages in St. Louis starring Ace Young and Diana DeGarmo.
I feel like that's not appropriate, but it's okay.
But also this American Idol reunion.
They're married.
They are.
Yes.
I had no idea.
That's why they do stuff together. They're married.
Oh, wow.
Aida has been, like, in rumors to go back to Broadway for a long time.
So the Disney theatrical, like, conversation was potentially, like, Aida or Hercules. And then Hercules had, like, a run at Paper Mill, and apparently it was not good. So they kind of, like, scrapped it. Because everyone was obsessed with it when it was at the Delacorte, like, outside. Mm-hmm. When Jelani did it, Krista Rodriguez did it, and then I think James Monroe Iglehart was in it.
Was it Roger Bart?
It was Roger Bart. Roger Bart reprising his, like, animated movie role.
Roger Bart was, like, Hercules, wasn't he? And then, so he played Hades.
He played Hades, yeah. Everyone was obsessed with it at the Delacorte, but then everybody hated it at Paper Mill. So,
yeah.
I don't know. But now, the revivals for the season, as you said, let's start with the one that we are seeing. It's also the one that's opening first, which as of 2 days ago, we got an opening night for Merrily We Roll Along, which is October 10th. It's at the Hudson, and we're going. This is the first time in many years that we've bought tickets in advance, and I cannot believe. Like, we also spent a lot of money on these tickets.
Oh my God. More than we spent on Taylor. I can't stress that enough. I cannot stress that enough.
But it's Jonathan Groff, Daniel Radcliffe, and Lindsay Mendez. And we only heard absolutely incredible things from their run at the Public.
This will be our first... New York Theatre Workshop?
New York Theatre Workshop.
This will be our first Merrily...
Ever.
...experience. We've never seen it on stage before. And the cast recording is, I think, for me, has always been difficult without the context of, like, seeing the show. So I'm very excited.
We're supposed to see it here. It was like Yes Theatre's, it was going to be Yes Theatre's like first venture into Toronto.
Yes Theatre and Crow's collaboration, correct? And then it was canceled.
Yeah, so. It was canceled. It was announced like for 2020, then it got pushed and then it got canceled. So, yeah.
Unfortunate.
But yeah, I don't know too much about it and I kind of want to keep it that way.
Yeah, I know a little bit about the structure, obviously.
I know there's like three friends.
And
I will say, whoever's doing their marketing, congrats, because I'm obsessed with the, like, photo booth style.
Yes. Just, like, black and white photos of the three of them brings me joy.
Makes so me good. Happy. They actually look like they're besties. I love it.
I feel like they kind of might be besties. But and maybe that's just, they're just faking us.
I mean, we have both seen Groff on stage before. We've never seen Daniel Radcliffe, and we've never seen Lindsay Mendez.
My brother actually saw The Cripple of Inishmaun.
Oh.
During Daniel Radcliffe, like, many years ago, which was, like, a Martin McDonagh play.
But, like, to me, the most exciting one is Lindsay Mendez. Like, I love Lindsay Mendez.
I know.
Remember we saw her at the stage door of Moulin Rouge in 2019?
I was just going to say, I do remember that. I do.
If we ever met her, I'd be like, I love Dogfight. That's all I have to say.
I love Dogfight. I love, I don't know.
Her and Derek Klena, like, playing Elphaba and Fiero together. Loved that. I just love Lindsay Mendez. No, you know what we would tell her? That we loved the pandemic. What was that play?
Significant Other.
Yes, that's what we would tell
her. That's so true. So true.
That changed me.
I haven't thought about that in a while now. Maybe I should buy that play.
It was so good. Oh my God, it was so good. Okay, moving on to...
The next one. The next one is something that we, interestingly, our most recent episode, we spoke with the star of it in Canada here at Stratford. Spamalot is coming back to Broadway.
Yeah.
Starring James Monroe Iglehart.
I know, James Monroe Iglehart, Leslie Kritzer. Ethan Slater!
Ethan Slater, I can't. That was iconic when they announced him.
They had, so there was a rumor, there's been rumors since the Kennedy Center production of Spamalot that Spamalot was transferring back to Broadway because everyone loved it off Broadway. Mm-hmm. I just, Are we not the target audience? We're not the target audience of Spamalot. That's the real answer here.
People have loved Monty Python for years. It has never been my favorite kind of humor, which was emphasized when we saw Spamalot. It has never been an issue. Well, not never, but watching it at Stratford, it was not an issue of talent. It was not an issue of production.
No, the production was actually fantastic.
Great. Matched the tone of the music and of the story and of the humor so well, the production. Everyone was kind of like, knew exactly what they needed to be doing at all times, but those jokes were not funny to me. And that's a me problem.
No, like, I agree.
Not a problem with the show. It's just like, it just wasn't a match.
It's very interesting because when this was announced, it was like, I've been waiting for this. And I'm like,
yeah.
Have you?
You have?
I haven't, but that's fine. Also in this cast, Michael Urie, Nick Walker, and then Lancelot is still like question mark.
Jordan Donica.
I mean, he did just play Lancelot.
That's what I'm saying.
In Camelot. This is at the St. James Theater. That theater is literally a revolving door. Like, nothing can stay there for a very long time. The last show that was there was New York, New York, and before that was Into the Woods. So I've been at the St. James.
Well, Into the Woods was limited, but like Frozen.
Frozen was there for a while.
Frozen was kind of like longer.
Yeah.
I'm looking at their like recent things.
Oh, sorry, back to Merrily for a second. That has a closing date. It is March 24th. So it's a limited run. Yeah, I mean, I predict that at the Tonys, many of the actors from Spamalot will get nominated. I just feel like it's one of those shows that's very, like, showy performance-wise.
I'm saying, like,
James Murrow Egglehart will most likely be nominated. I'm putting it out there that Leslie Kritzer will probably be nominated, and maybe one more person, maybe whoever's playing Lancelot, will be nominated. Watch Ethan Slater get nominated and bring Ariana Grande to the Tonys.
I saw People Magazine article about them being like, their relationship, their PR people are working like overtime.
You know, we've really slowed down on the amount of information that we've been getting, but I don't think I've ever laughed harder than when we were in the complete spiral of Ariana Grande, Ethan Slater, and then the literal next day it's like Ethan Slater back to Broadway. And I just saw all of these tweets being like, imagine the rehearsal room being like, so what did you guys get up to this summer?
And Ethan, you know, big movie. You know, someone said, so Ethan Slater in Spamalot is going to be playing the character of Prince Herbert.
/ the historian. I don't remember this character.
No, he was at the end, like, Lancelot's...
lover?
Like, lover. Like, the prince.
Oh, this is a fun role for Ethan.
That's fun for him. Okay, so I guess the funny part of that is, you know, there's obviously this cheating scandal, potentially, that's been happening with Ethan Slater. And do you know who played this role on Broadway in 2005? You know who originated this role?
It was Christian Borle.
So they're like, look, we're getting a little too sensitive. This isn't even the first Broadway cheating scandal involving someone playing Prince Herbert in Spamalot. Okay?
The Christian Borle son.
Basic
Foster,
boring, Ethan.
Laura Bell Bundy, like that whole like incident. Wow. I also forgot to say, because I didn't scroll down on the Instagram, but Chris Fitzgerald is playing Patsy, and I know how you feel about him.
You know, my favorite actor.
I know how you feel about him, but I actually think this is very good casting for that character.
No, I agree it's good casting, and yet I don't want to see it.
No, we won't be seeing Spamalot, but...
No, I won't be seeing
Spamalot. But it is a fantastic cast.
Every day I praised that Christopher Fitzgerald was out the week I saw him last year.
It's a fantastic cast, and I really think that they will do very well at the box office, so this will be a... I think a decent run for this revival.
I'm happy for them. Excited.
And then the next show, which does not have an opening date, just that it's opening in the spring at the August Wilson, is the much highly anticipated West End transfer of Cabaret. There are many a rumor of many people that will be playing Sally Bowles. There's also rumors that Eddie Redmayne will be leading this production as the MC. I swear if Eddie comes, I will be first in line. That cast recording is unhinged.
It's so good. In the spring, A Trip for Cabaret and The Notebook.
That's it.
That's that. And then just like come home. Yeah. Like fly in a Wednesday morning. Fly
a two-show.
Out like Wednesday night. Fly out Wednesday night at, like, midnight. Just, like, come home.
I'll do it. I'm ready.
Yeah, I'm down.
I'm surprised that the August Wilson is where this is playing, because in the West End, you've never seen a picture. It was in the round. Because you can't take pictures. But you can see the outside of the theater. They've really, it's the, like, the beautiful production design of the Kit Kat Club. Two of my friends from work have seen the cabaret production on the West End and said that it is outrageous in the best possible way. I wonder if they will be doing what they do in the West End of, like, pulling seats from the theater to make, like, dinner seating.
Right. That's what they've done with previous productions of cabaret in New York at Studio 54.
Yeah.
So, yeah, interesting.
But, yeah, there's a no cameras policy on the West End in that theater, but I did hear that, like, when you walk into the theater, there's, like, a bar that's been created, and the performers are already out, like, on the bar. Mm-hmm. So it is immersive from the moment that you walk in, and I really do hope that they bring that immersiveness to New York. I want it to be like Moulin Rouge, but, like, heightened.
Yeah, like that kind of, you know, you walk in and you're in the club.
Yeah.
Energy.
So yeah, excited for Cabaret. And then the final, at this time, revival that's been announced for spring 2024 with no theater attached is The Wiz. It's been a long time since The Wiz has been on Broadway, so this is very exciting.
We've been talking about this one for a long time as well, since The Wiz Live. It's been rumored to be on Broadway. I don't know if this is that production. This might just be a different thing, but I feel like that's how long we've been talking about it coming back to Broadway.
Okay, so interesting. I just went to the Wiz's website, and it says Wayne Brady, January 16th, 2024, Broadway engagement. So is Wayne Brady...
Is he going to be like the lion?
No, he's... Oh, it doesn't say. Oh, no, The Wiz. He will be The Wiz.
The Wiz.
Because it says September 23rd to January 14th is Alan Mingo Jr., who is a previous Lola in Kinky Boots. Did we not see him? I swear we did.
I don't know who we saw in Toronto.
I think we might have. And then Deborah Cox as Galinda are... Oh my god! Sorry, I'm reading this for the first time, but, like, Kyle Raymer Freeman as the lion? We love Kyle from A Strange Loop.
Where is this? Where are you looking at?
I'm looking at the cast and creative of The Wiz.
Are they doing it out of town right now? Like, what's going on?
Yes.
Where are they right now?
They are somewhere... Sorry, I'm, like, so excited for Kyle. We love Kyle. Like, his Usher great. Was...
So, yeah, they're touring this right now.
The Wiz is...
It starts September 23rd in Baltimore. That's the first production. And then they're touring it until March 3rd, 2024, after which I assume it will go to Broadway.
Yes.
The pre-Broadway national tour.
Oh my god, that... So the Wiz, NBC was in 2015. I can't believe it was that long ago. But the last time The Wiz was on Broadway was 1984. So this is a true... I feel like long time coming revival.
It's exciting.
I've never seen The Wiz on stage. I do love the music. I love the song Home. I think it will be exciting to have, like, another version of The Wizard of Oz, like, back on stage. I don't know. It's very exciting. Have you seen the movie? I've never seen the movie.
No, I have not seen the movie. I've seen clips of the movie. And I know, like, songs like Brand New Day, Isn't on the Road. I've seen The Wiz Live.
Brand new day. Yeah, Michael Jackson, was he the Scarecrow?
Yes.
I think he was, yeah.
Michael Jackson, Diana Ross, like...
Once so when good. I was at dance camp, Dance to the Beat, if it still exists, shout out.
Dance to the Beat.
We did a dance to Ease On Down the Road.
Well, when we worked together...
When we did The Wizard of Oz.
With The Wizard of Oz, we did Ease On Down the Road as well.
Also, when I did The Wizard of Oz... When I was in grade 5, we added the, like, Tin Man song, like, Slide Some Oil to Me, I believe is what it's called, into our production of The Wizard of Oz.
Wow.
It's a great score of songs.
Great score.
It's only September, so we will see what happens. But that, for now, is the New York season preview. We did not mention at the beginning of this episode, but obviously only musicals. Although there are already so many plays announced for this season. So, it's a busy fall, it seems, on Broadway. There's a great article that Playbill put out and a great article that Broadway.com put out about what to see in the fall. And we will obviously keep you posted on what we see when we see it. And there will be corresponding episodes in the new year. So exciting stuff leading into the 2023-2024 season. And with that, it is now time for our obsession of the week. Okay, Steph, what's your obsession?
My obsession, this is a bit of a cop-out, but it is speaking to a moment that I'm having in my life right now. Oh my God. Okay?
Where are we going with this?
So I have been listening to I've been calling this my Tick, Tick, Boom birthday because I'm turning 30 just like...
They're singing happy birthday.
Just like Jonathan Larson turns 30 in Tick, Tick, Boom. So I have been spending a lot of time... I feel like we've spoken about this before, but I feel like it's speaking to a moment in my life, so I get to speak about it. I've been listening to a lot of 3090 recently because it doesn't make me cry the way like Louder Than Words makes me cry. So there's obviously two versions. There is obviously the Raul Esparza version. I kind of like the Raul Esparza version because I love Raul Esparza's company as well. So, you know, you get the, like, parallel for your, like, Tick, Tick, Boom birthday and then your Bobby birthday.
Yeah.
5 years apart.
Yeah.
But I actually have been listening to the movie version with Andrew Garfield and Joshua Henry. It's just, like, a crisper production. Not just another birthday, it's 39.
Also, just a PSA, I know we've talked about it a million times, but if you have not seen Tick, Tick, Boom, the movie, like, stop this episode and go watch it, because it was maybe, like, one of the best movies to come out. What year was that? 2021?
Yeah, 2021. Should I watch it on my 30th birthday?
And just cry?
Should I make my family watch it?
Yes. It's so good. I remember, like, I watched it again a few months ago, and I just, like, sat on my couch and cried, because I was like, wow, this movie is so good.
I haven't watched it since that first time I watched it, but I do like
you have it sometimes.
No, ah. The like Superbia.
Oh, my favorite song. Sextet montage. My favorite song.
Sextet montage. Everyone knows everyone.
I love that song. But yeah,
specifically, you know, 3090. It's just relatable. You will never relate to that song more than 39. The 2 weeks before you turn 30. Wow.
This sounds like you're about to enter a midlife crisis. Please don't.
No, I'm not really entering a midlife crisis. But, you know, sometimes things just speak to you in the moment.
No, that's good. I love that song. I love it.
Tara, what's your obsession this week?
Okay, my obsession this week, as you know, we had the end of an era recently. We have just finished watching High School Musical, the series, season 4.
Yes.
It ended our 4 years, right?
Yes.
Of watching this show together. As we said on a previous episode, I feel like it was our Better Nathan Ever episode because Tim Federle, that it got us through some of the darkest days of the pandemic, watching High School Musical, the musical, the series.
Summer 2020, we were there.
It really peaked in season one. Season one really gave me everything that I wanted. Season two, the first half was pretty good. It did give us the greatest breakup episode maybe in TV history.
Maybe.
I just hold you now? And then season three and season four kind of dragged. But
season three did give us the real campers of Shallow Lake.
You're so right.
We will forever be grateful.
Yes. But nonetheless, end of an era. I, as a whole, loved this series. I loved what they did branching out of those three movies, which obviously hold a very special place in my heart. I will say that I think the second last episode of season 4 was really great. We discussed this. Anytime they do the musical is when it's peak. And this season they did High School Musical 3, and then the final episode was like... fine, but we were both crying by the end. So, like, I guess it was great.
When they went to Denny's, you know? I cried.
Yeah.
I knew they were going to Denny's. I knew it.
Yeah, you did call it. But my real obsession of the week is something that was, like, so unexpected and destroyed me. And Tim Federle, like, how dare you do that to us in a post-credit scene of High School Musical, the musical, the series, when the entire cast sings For Good from Wicked.
Because I knew.
Because I knew you.
Because
So I did see it in the credits when the credits roll, and I said out loud as we were watching, I'm like, why is Forgood in the credits of this show? I thought, because, like, spoiler, but in the show, like, Miss Jen, the character, gets a letter to join the national tour cast of Wicked, and I thought maybe they played, like, an instrumental, I just didn't hear it. Oh no, they gave us the full version. And I cried, and it was beautiful, and I feel like some of those kids have never even heard that song. That's how I felt watching it. I was like, some of them are hearing this for the first time, and then, like, whoever plays Carlos and Seb, and obviously Julia Lester, were like, this is my favorite song ever. Like, that's how it felt. But it was beautiful.
Joshua Bassett is just here. He's just there.
He sounded great, though. It was beautiful. The star of the show. And obviously Kate, what's her last name?
Grinders.
Was a Galinda in Wicked, so like a full circle moment for her, I feel, to like get to sing that song with like her new found family of this cast. And I thought it was such a beautiful way to end this series. And now we have nothing to watch, so
we really are out of things to watch. We need to find a new show.
So yeah, so that's my obsession of the week. That is the 2023-2024 Broadway season. And our next episode will be Toronto and Surrounding Areas season preview. There's a lot happening in the city, and a lot of it is happening very, very soon. So yes. Exciting times for upcoming theater right here at home. But if you want to listen to any of our other episodes, you can do that by subscribing to our podcast wherever you listen to podcasts. You can also watch us on YouTube. Don't forget to subscribe and leave us a comment.
And you can follow us on Twitter and Instagram at @OffToBeAwayPodcast with the number 2, and tell us what you're most excited about for this upcoming Broadway season.
And we will see you next time.
Bye.